Welcome to UX Patter Season 3, where I, Dushyant Kanungo, talk to the leaders in the design field about their journey and what inspires them to be the best. I also touch upon the aspects of the industry such as jobs, trends, and challenges, to name a few. This podcast is presented by Galaxy UX Studio and powered by Galaxy Weblinks, an Inc. 5000 company. Hello, everyone. I am Dushyant Kanungo, your host for UX Panther podcast. Now, in season 3, we have had several phenomenal guests, and we have learned a lot about UX design, the industry, the field, and where everybody is heading off. So for today, get ready to meet a true master of product design with nearly 25 years of experience creating solutions for big shots such as Citibank, Amex, and Ferrari. He specializes in designing AI conversational interfaces and is known for his expertise in global e-commerce, omni, and multi-channel retails. He is a design ninja, knowing various design tools, and a polyglot who speaks Portuguese, Spanish, French, Italian, and English. Please welcome our multi-talented guest, the Director of Experience Design at Kenview, Tiago Estrada.
Hi, nice to meet you.
And welcome to the show, Tiago.
It's a pleasure.
So you are one of those people who have started out very early when the entire IT revolution was happening, and you have seen everything transform from the very early days of the business and the industry. So we would like to know that how the journey has been so far. I mean, you've worked with such big brands, and what are the key moments in your career have been like, and where are you right now?
Yes, thank you. So I started my career early working in e-commerce, but more interested on the data side of things. So back then, you know, we used to use Omniture and Core Metrics. Core Metrics later got acquired by IBM. But these were the tools that we used to implement within e-commerce businesses, recommendation engines. So this was the beginning of machine learning. And for me, it was important that I got acquainted with some of these systems, and then led me later to join Infor, which is a software company, where I wanted to know more about the 360 customer view of the clients.
All right. So how has been the journey? It's been like 25 years now, if I'm not wrong.
Yeah, maybe 50-50 in e-commerce, and then the rest is product design and working as a consultant for agencies.
So while you were working on the 50-50 side of things with agencies and the product design companies, so let's talk about the entrepreneurial parts of product design and how do you see it with the current scenarios?
Yes. So because designers sit closer to customers and users, they do have that advantage in terms of more understanding and anticipating those so-called customer needs. Yes. So because of that position in terms of product design, it changed things. So designers now can look for solutions, not just, you know, in case there's B2C, but also have the influence as designers intervene as operations, but also on an organizational level. Yes. So because of these opportunities, the designer now sits at a more closer position, yes, where he's more able to observe and to research into, again, like anticipate user needs, but also can keep a closer eye in terms of, you know, those user, I would say, you know, what I would call dynamic UX, is able to listen and to establish a better relationship in terms of the user journey and touch points.
So you just talked about the customer-facing experience. Is it different from the general customer experience or the user experience, as we say?
So for customer experience, I would consider it's the same as the user experience.
Okay. So one of the things that we have been talking a lot about, I mean, the last time we spoke, we also talked about it. So can you tell us more about the part where you said it is about the conversational interfaces or conversational UI?
Yes, I think it's, you know, it's an exciting time in terms of the way companies need to start to communicate in different ways with customers, yes, or users in this case. And, you know, there's a lot of, you could see that happen within the so-called bot revolution, yes, but we're not there yet. So I think, you know, you see a lot of attempts in terms of coming up with interfaces that simulate that type of simplicity that exists in a conversation. Yes, just think of breathing, think of the silence moments. Those are very difficult things to translate in terms of technology. And that's what I think, you know, it's exciting for young designers and exciting for the discipline of design to try to achieve and to try to work for in designing such interfaces.
All right. So with that, one more question that I have. So one of the clients that you worked for, or one of the companies that you've been associated with, was Ferrari. So can you tell us anything about your experience working with a brand which is globally renowned for the luxury and the way they have approached things so far? And anywhere we see the logo, it is instantly recognizable and it is always associated with high luxury. What was your experience working for Ferrari?
You know, it was amazing in terms of, you know, what I learned on customer relationship mostly, you know, the way they allow for customers to do extreme configuration. Again, we're talking about personalization. I was astonished to know that Ferrari allows to that, for that, you know, deeper customization. They actually do white gloves kind of customization where your car is actually taken out of the assembly line and then goes through a authentic, you know, a white glove type of step by step. Obviously, it's super expensive.
It is supposed to be. So, yeah. So it must have been a very different experience with the other organizations that you've been working with during that period.
Yes and no. I mean, you know, like when I work with Ferrari, you know, I was at Infor. So Infor, I think even today, has a lot of the ERP software in terms of that works in the Maranello factory in Italy. So from that relationship, we built a couple of applications that would worked as a kind of like a front end applications to some of the EAM type of contract that they had with Ferrari.
All right. So thank you for the insight there. So in our last conversation, we've been talking about that your focus has been remained on the e-commerce side with machine learning. So you have seen the change of the dynamics in the industry where the machine learning now, because it has become an omnipresent fact that now it has to be with the AI and everything coming into play. Now, how you are going to use the ML recommendation engines along with the business growth in product design?
Well, it's always about the source of the truth. Yes, if their data is structured enough that it could be applied. Yes. So, I mean, I think the biggest examples in terms of how product design is so important is, you know, in data is in terms of segmentation. For example, how to come up with hyper-personalized solutions in terms of when I'm able to segment my data and I'm able to understand better each of the segments, I can then start to personalization, yes, which is what everyone wants in our days. I would say also in terms of personalization, it's not just, you know, about providing data to customers, getting data from customers, it's about providing data too. I think it's the next step too.
So it's about meaningful conversation rather than just saying that, okay, this is a new thing that you might like, have it and go.
Yes.
I mean, that becomes the point. I mean, if you go to a store, it's about that. You are only going to see the things the shopkeeper is willing to, you know, show you, like back in the days. Now you can actually browse the catalog completely. But they also have some things which are presented right in front of you, that this is the top seller or this is the new arrival that you might like to browse and take on with. Okay, so with that, I would like to talk more about the scaling design ops with the design system, because in product design domain where we sit, I think this becomes one of the key aspects of it. That how do you think that how much design systems become the key in setting up or scaling a design op at any agency or any department or in the industry?
Yeah, design systems are very important, but you know, they are not a thing of the past. So most of the brands that I worked with don't really realize that design systems are all about what are the new components that you're going to build, what are the new experiences that you're going to build, because if you're going to scale within 2 and 3 years, so as the interfaces. Yes, user adoption is really what runs you know, the need for new design interfaces. So I think that's very important.
So let me get it straight. So what you're saying is that rather than the conventional design system that we have, you also need to think about the entire end-to-end experience, how it can be, you know, captured, not just the elemental level details, but the entire interaction should be captured within the design system guidelines so that we can actually scale it when the right time comes.
Yeah, so the design system allows you, obviously, in order, you know, in terms of the more guidance that you have in terms of your teams, yes, your product designers, your developers, allows you to build at scale and faster. But what I'm trying to say, also more important, is the future components that you're going to build, the future experience, all of those transitions and interactions is also something that the design system will encapsulate. Yes. So actually, that part of the design system is more important. Yes. Those are the new experiences. So again, you're using a new tech platform in order to embed a new experience that then, you know, you're going to push at scale. And so I have this view of a design system, but I've noticed most persons think of it as more like a library, something a bit of the past. Yes, yes, you have to maintain it, but they consider it something of the past.
A revolutionary part when it came to design system integration was around the time when the tablets, computers came in and everybody wanted to have all the applications they're developing should be accessible on iPads and tablets. But nowadays, I mean, everything just went down to a path where we are just creating mobile apps for mobile devices only. We are not considering, say, an iPad or a tablet design when the first cut designs come out. But with the invention and the arrival of foldable phones, we might like to go back and rethink about the strategy that how the interactions are going to change. So the moment I just, rather than using my phone just straight up, the moment I open or fold it, unfold it, I think the entire interaction should be native. It should not look that it is jumping out. And I think that sort of those parts are the future interactions that we actually need to consider, that there are three screens now. There is a tiny screen at the back of the phone, then there is a big screen on the front, and then you fold it. So one device gives you, what, about three different types of interactions that we can actually come up?
Yeah. I mean, in some cases, I mean, I think Google calls that in between screens, the idea fountain.
All right. I mean, I think it's always been the case that we are just going back and forward with what the sizes are and what we are designing for, from the smaller BlackBerry units to now designing for different sets of, you know, unless material design came in when everything was scalable. Otherwise, on every time we were designing, we are designing for various widths and heights of the Android phones when we started off. But thankfully, the whole rush had died down, and now we have, you know, common single code platforms such as React Native to build on or Flutter to build on, where you don't need to worry about that platform that the end application is going to be implemented. But I think still the foldable phones are bringing back the tab-based designs, which I think we have somewhat paused in the process, but the design system should be able to cover those interactions that how what will happen when everything just scales on the go, rather than just opening in a screen of that size. So yeah, that's phenomenal, isn't it?
Yep.
So okay. So with that, I'm bringing back my UX banter cards that will have rapid fire questions. Yay! So I hope you are ready. So I have a few questions here, and I'm going to shuffle this deck. So the order in which the questions arrive, I have no idea that what is going to be asked. So we'd like to know more about you. And without giving you time to think, you just need to answer as they come. So which was your least favorite job till date?
What was my worst job? I would say some startups that I worked with. You know, one of them was inside a broker's type of environment. So we had like an office inside an office. It was pretty much... You know, yeah, it was pretty much not a good experience.
It happens to the best of us, isn't it? The longer the career, the those sort of mid jobs somewhere in the hierarchy that, you know, you have to go through. And my dad always says that, you know, when you have to cross a door, if the door, it doesn't matter what is the width and height of the door is, if you have to cross, you're not going to fight it. If it is a lower, you have to actually move and crawl past it. Otherwise, there is no point fighting the door.
Well, I mean, in this case, you know, the conditions were very poor. I mean, even an office space, yeah.
Okay. So first thing you do when you wake up.
First thing I do when I wake up, I like my coffee.
All right. So next question is your favorite mobile app.
I mean, I guess my personal banking, because it's that easy.
Is it because of the UX part of it or just because what it actually entails?
Just because it's that easy. You know, I think banking got it right in terms of customer service. They made their application so easy. I just go in, I check, you know, my credit. I look at my expenses all in a very easy to glimpse dashboard.
So may I know which bank's app is it?
Capital One.
Capital One. All right. So Capital One.
They're all pretty similar. I mean, in that sense. I mean, they all have their AIs looking for fraud. And they all have the very simple dashboard. Some of them, the best, let me configure it.
Back in the day, I was also working for Santander and we were doing their mobile app. So our app was ranked second every single time any review, the best mobile banking apps, and the Santander was always at number two. And I was somewhat responsible for, you know, we were fighting that in UK, you know, trying to find ways that, what are the gaps? How can we make it number one? But the challenge is, I mean, it looks fairly simple, but when anybody who is going to design and build up a mobile banking app, they might look the similar with the features and the data that is displaying, but the handicaps they come up with, that there are technical restrictions, there are business restrictions, there is some lawyer sitting in the meeting telling you,
yeah, you're right.
A certain exercise. Hey, it's fun, but yeah, Capital One for the win. Okay, what is your favorite holiday destination?
My favorite holiday destination. I mean, you know, I'm from Northern Portugal. I like to go there every year. So I would say Northern Portugal.
Nice. So do you visit Portugal often?
Yeah, I go there every year.
Oh, nice. So books or movies?
Both. I like the movie with the book that gets into a movie, and then you can do both. You can read the book and then see the movie and compare the adaptation.
Okay, so your favorite movie?
Ooh, I mean, you know, I don't really have one favorite. I'll say a few favorite movies. I Am Cuba. I like that.
And what about the book? Which book would you recommend everybody to read?
Wild Palms by William Faulkner. It's a love story. Mm-hmm. One impossible love story. I love William Faulkner, yeah.
Yeah, we get plenty of recommendations. I'm just starting to start a book club with, you know, recommendations coming in from every guest, because this is the question that every time that I ask. So right now I am reading this one, which is Essentialism by Greg McKeown. So it talks about that how you concentrate your energies into doing just one thing at a time so that it becomes, you know, you. The growth is evident that whatever you're doing is just going from point A to point B is easier. Okay, so are you a go-out person or stay-in person?
I'm both. I think, you know, one needs to go out. I think, you know, I believe in turning around the corner and getting surprises. So for that, you need to go out, yes.
All right. And the final question is, if you win $10 million tomorrow, what is the first thing that you are going to buy?
I'll donate it.
Really?
Yeah, donate it for some social security cause.
Thank you very much. I think that is one of the amazing answers, that you know you don't have plans for $10 million and what you are clear about what to do with it.
No, I wouldn't want it.
Right. So talking about doing something for a good cause, we also been talking about the design systems and the way they are designed today, and they are not actually speaking a global language. So you were quite passionate when we spoke about it last, that how design system can go global and they can actually help resolve one of the biggest issues in our society today. So would you like to talk more about it, please?
Yeah, I think, you know, design has a sociological component. Yes, obviously. And so there are a bit of this social responsibility. Yes, I mean, you know, if you're looking to create a braille system, for example, for accessing a building. But at the same time, you know, these standards, some of them exist and they are universal. Other standards were implemented a bit later, you know, with, for example, space exploration, where everything turns left to right. Yes, so the Chinese or Russian an American space station, it would be, the axis will always be left to right. So I always kind of question, why don't we have more of that standardization, universal standardization with design? Yes, why does he has to not have more of these, you know, universal standards that could be applied to humanity and, you know, help in some of the cases to simplify the type of language, because we know it's all also about communication and that simplicity within communication. Yes, then that involves education and et cetera, et cetera. But I think he always astonished me that we're not at that point yet where there's not a more of these universal canons and universal standards for design.
True. I think this becomes a difficult based on the number of people who are going to be in the target audience zone. For example, Mandarin is a very popular language. So there are a number of users, are many, and that's why other than the patterns on which the system is developed is quite common. So in India, there are about 27 official languages which are in use. And if you are going to design a system from the government's point of view, including all the languages in one application from the central database, it becomes a bigger challenge than actually releasing a product that covers just English or Hindi, which are the two most spoken languages. These are official languages. We don't have a national language. These are the language to do the operations day to day. In every state, the state language actually changes. And that is how we cannot call one language as a national language of the country. So creating a global system, actually, it makes sense from that perspective as well. I mean, from EU's point of view, they are actually covering multiple countries and the language translation is possible. But then comes the accessibility part, as you rightly mentioned, that we also need to include that somebody who is coming, say, from Japan, and they are trying to access a website which is written, say, default in Finnish. And how somebody can access the website, they can actually understand all the cues and hints which are there and should be able to get the information that they are actually seeking. Because many a times, a lot of the information which people are seeking, but they actually can't get it because of the barriers in learning, the languages that actually come in the way. So do you think that it can be one open source project that, you know, designers can start with and they can just create some ground up and then say, this is an open source approach to design. And now we are trying to make a design system which is globally acceptable.
I mean, that would be an interesting concept, yes, to have an open source the idea of including standards, yes, for any type of disability, any type of, you know, even future disabilities, you know, with monitors, we're all becoming more and more blind. I think that's a very interesting idea, for example, if invite designers to contribute it in order to, you know, try to devise what a universal design system would work for such of these, you know, ethnic groups and geographies and, you know, people not only from the three age principles, but also including, you know, all the different types of disabilities that we currently have.
So I think one thing that is definitely can be done is that the initial project kickoff can actually happen by inviting people from different countries with their roots firmly into the culture where they are, and they can also, you know, jump in together to decide upon the guidelines, and they can include the ADA compliance, the web accessibility guidelines as the primary set stone, and then they can actually propose that how the tomorrow's design system is going to look like. I think that can actually resolve the problem, and this gives a brilliant idea. I'm definitely going to propose it in front of the communities and the circles that I'm associated with. I'm looking forward to trying out something with that. Would you mind if I come back to you with further suggestions or consultations on the same idea?
Absolutely, it'd be a pleasure.
All right. So with that, what advice would you like to give to anybody who is starting off as a product professional in the industry? The young people who want to follow the path that you followed and where you are, where you don't need to worry about the $10 million winning.
Yeah, I mean, you know, really, I think it's, you know, just look into the discipline of design really with a strong sociological input, meaning research is vital, yes? So know your users, know who you're making that particular application. I think it's the most important, yes? So because if, you know, we talked about data being given both ways, yes? And if there's this exchange of data, yes, then you're going to create a more educated user and, you know, overall, you know, achieve a better experience. Yes. So I would think that, you know, understanding your user, understanding what the user wants in that particular application is the most important.
So thank you very much, Tiago, for being so candid about the way that we are looking at the future, the way every designer should head on with the design systems, the way the product designs has been like, the journey, the way on the path with which the world is headed. So design ops and design systems become the key aspect in growth for any organization and the way they are approaching for the solutions and scaling for the future interactions rather than just looking at what they need to build today. Because scalable design systems are the only way in which the products can get the sustenance, the sustainability part of it sorted. And I think once we get the key right, if the design systems are created in a way where they are scalable, modular, plus it provides you with the interactions that can essentially may not be required today, but if they can actually include some things that might come useful in the future, that gives it the level of dynamism which is required for a successful product. So thank you once again for joining us for this podcast. And it has been an enlightening experience.
Thank you, Dushan. I mean, it was a pleasure for me too.
So thank you everyone for listening in or watching this on YouTube. It is available on all the platforms where the podcasts are, be it Spotify, Apple, Google, and other channels which are similar to it. And we'll come back with another episode of UX Panther podcast. So stay tuned and don't forget to follow and share. All right. Have a wonderful day ahead, guys.
Thank you.
Thank you. Bye.